Hi, welcome to part number two of our basic debating instructions series. And today we're going to talk about the stock issues, the issues that occur in every debate. I'm Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont. And I'm joined for this discussion by Justin Parmet, a debate coach at UVM and a faculty member at the World Debate Institute, and a graduate of our debate program. And in your senior year, you were top speaker at the East Regional Championship.
I was.
It was just luck, though, right?
Yeah,
just luck. Well, we want to talk about some arguments that will come up in just about every debate and vocabulary terms that will arise in every debate and some basic building blocks for what happens. And it's fortunate that there are the same stock issues that come up over and over again, because that makes it possible for you as a new debater to learn several basic concepts and then use those concepts right away in your debate. One of the things that we should say, though, is that none of this is written in stone. Most things can be debated about. You can debate about the things that happen in a debate. But these are good starting points, and I would say in the vast majority of debates, these are the kind of things that are going to happen. But remember, you can make arguments about just about anything you want, because after all, it is a debate. One of the things about the debate is that we have a resolution.
Yes, and the resolution is also known sometimes as the topic, and that basically is just what you debate about. And that is what everyone will debate about. The resolution is different each year, and it is the same resolution for the entire year. And because this is policy debate, it is a policy-based resolution, and it says, usually saying that the United States federal government should take some type of action.
And whenever you have a debate, anyone wants to know what will be debated about and who will be debating. And of course, you'll be debating, but the topic is what the debate is supposed to be about. And the affirmative is in favor of the topic, they support it, and the negative usually opposes it.
Yep.
And so that's the contest of ideas that takes place. So the resolution is the grounding for the debate. Let's talk about the affirmative and what they do in the debate. Generally, what the affirmative does is they present their case for the resolution. The first affirmative constructive speech is almost always a scripted, prepared speech. So a lot of novices like to be first affirmative so that they have at least a constructive speech that's prepared. It's clearly organized. It's organized in a number of logical steps. And each of the logical steps usually conforms with one of the basic issues that the affirmative will have to deal with, the stock issues. Let's start with what's really the focus of policy debate, and it's something the affirmative has to have, and that's their plan. The topic, as Justin just mentioned, says that the federal government should adopt some specific policy, let's say an education reform, or a medical care reform, or a discrimination reform, and the topic itself is fairly general. What the affirmative needs to present in the first affirmative speech is their plan. And their plan is their specific proposal for what should happen. Generally, they try to mention in their plan who's going to do it, usually the federal government, what's going to be done, how it's going to be done, how it's going to be paid for, administered, and enforced. So really, the plan is the focus of policy debate. And while the plan may not be the first thing that the affirmative presents, it's really the critical thing that they present, and it's what the affirmative is stuck with throughout the debate, their plan. What are some other things that the affirmative is likely to say?
Well, the one AC speaks for 8 minutes, and obviously they can't speak for 8 minutes about the plan, so there's other things that must go along with that. The first one would be solvency or workability. The affirmative usually would read some kind of evidence that states that their plan would be able to solve the problem that they are laying out, which brings me to the next thing, which would be inherency, which inherency is the problem that persists, the reason that there is an inherent problem in the status quo. And that is something that the affirmative must also bring out in the 1AC. Additionally, other than inherency and the solvency, the affirmative needs to have some kind of advantages, some significant reason why it would be a good idea for them to do the plan. This is an explanation of the beneficial outcome of the proposal of the plan that the affirmative is laying out.
So every first affirmative will generally say that there's a problem.
There's a problem in the status quo, that's the inherency.
Right?
Yeah.
That this, and that they will present a plan,
yeah,
which shows that how they think they can solve that problem. And then they'll try to prove that their plan will solve that problem.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes, Justin, people have contentions, and sometimes they have advantages,
yeah,
and there are many different ways to have an affirmative speech, but do they all have to have these basic components?
Yeah, whether you call have it in your 1AC as contentions, observations, advantages, however you hear it, that's not as important as making sure that everyone has a plan in their 1AC, there's inherency, there's solvency, and some kind of advantages as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's not just something that's strangely involved with just debate. If you were deciding whether you would buy a house, for example, you would say, do we need a new house,
yep,
right? Is there any way that we could live in our current house, right, and get by? And if not, then you would look at a new house that you might buy and ask if that house met your needs.
Yeah, if it's workable, you pay for it.
That's the basic logical process that happens anytime you're proposing some new action. Now, one of the things that the negative will try to do is attack the affirmative case. And so if the affirmative's verb to show there's a problem, there's inherency to have a plan, and to say that their plan will solve the problem, but it's likewise the negative's burden to attack the affirmative case to show that there isn't a problem now, that the problem could be easily solved now, or that the affirmative plan simply would not work. And probably the major negative argument that people use is the negative solvency argument that shows that the plan won't work. Because you can't get credit for a problem you don't solve.
Right.
You could have an affirmative case could have a really big problem, but they don't get credit for identifying a big problem. They have to get credit for solving that portion of the problem. So the negative will generally attack the affirmative case and just to deny what they've shown. Deny that there's a problem, deny that it will work. Of course, the negative can do a lot of other sort of micro things in attacking the affirmative case. They could attack their evidence. And what are some of the things they could say about the evidence?
You can make arguments maybe against the authors in the evidence, attacking the qualifications. Maybe, you know, they're reading evidence from a biased source or something, and you could point that out as another type of argument.
Or as often happens, the evidence doesn't necessarily prove the argument that the debate team is using it for.
Right. They may be making an argument off of a piece of evidence, and the evidence just doesn't say it. And you need to point that out in a debate and attack their evidence on that level.
Mm-hmm. Most judges, the vast majority of judges, expect the negative team to attack the affirmative case straight up. And you should always try to do that. If for no other reason than to meet their expectations.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have an affirmative case and we attack the affirmative case. Now, there are other issues that come into play in almost every debate as well.
Yeah. One of those issues would be topicality. And we have already said that the resolution is also known as the topic, and something the negative can do in their first negative speech is attack the affirmative plan, saying that their plan is not topical to the resolution. It's not a good representation of the topic. And there's a couple of things that the negative needs to do when they're saying that the affirmative team is not topical. And the first is they need to decide what part of the resolution the affirmative does not meet, and they need to have a definition of that word. They need to define the words that that they don't think the affirmative is meeting.
Once the negative, and the negative is the one who introduces the topicality attack, says that here's our definition of a critical term in the resolution, let's say educational reform.
Yep.
Right, and that would be an example. If the affirmative case says that all students should be vaccinated and that will improve their health, the negative could argue that that's not an education reform. That's a health issue.
Yeah,
it's a health reform.
The first thing they'd have to do is then read a definition of educational reform. And
then they would have to explain why the affirmative doesn't meet that definition. And that's called the violation. So the first step in any topicality argument, as Justin indicated, is to define the word or phrase that will be at issue. The other one is to explain how the affirmative plan, and it's the plan that has to be topical or not, not the affirmative case, but the plan, to explain how the plan itself violates that definition. So you would explain that an educational reform is one that's about academic achievement and learning, and the affirmative plan vaccinates students, and that's not about academic achievement. It's not about learning, so it's not an educational reform. One of the other things that then the negative will have to do is to explain why their interpretation of this word is good, why it's preferable. And these are generally known as the standards. You explain why your interpretation of the resolution is good and why it should be accepted. Have no doubt the affirmative will disagree with you. They will answer us. They'll have some reason why vaccinating people is an education reform. And so what the negative has to do is explain why their interpretation of the resolution is better than the other team's. One has to remember that this can be a sticky business because we're really arguing about the meanings of words and the meaning of meaning, and it gets into be a semantic dispute. The thing to remember is that you don't have to prove that your interpretation of the resolution is the be-all and end-all of human knowledge, but you do need to prove that it's better than theirs. The final thing that comes up in any topicality argument is that topicality is supposedly a voting issue. What we mean when we say voting issue is that the whole debate would be decided on those grounds. So the whole debate can turn on the topicality argument. The negative can win the entire debate right here. And it makes sense. For example, if you're a student in my American history class, and I assign a paper about the War of 1812, right? A paper about the War of 1812. And you hand in a paper to me on the war in Vietnam, what kind of grade do you think you'll get?
Probably a big fat F.
Probably an F, because you didn't do the assignment.
Yep.
You were supposed to write about the War of 1812, then you wrote about the war in Vietnam. The same thing with the debate round. You're supposed to debate about the topic. And when the negative proves that you don't, then the affirmative loses the debate. Now, don't worry. This will not usually be an open and shut case. For example, you could write a paper explaining that, you know, the War in Vietnam and the War of 1812 had a lot of things in common. And learning from one, we can find out about the other. And that's the kind of thing that the affirmative will do. They'll have their story. But remember, topicality is a way for the negative to win the debate. What that means is if the negative doesn't have anything else to say, they can focus on topicality. And it also means that the affirmative must address and answer topicality at all times in the debate. Otherwise, it's an easy way to lose.
Yes, when you're thinking of an affirmative case to run, you should always be ready to have your topicality story while you are topical to the resolution.
Mm-hmm. There are some other arguments that are introduced in the debate, and usually they're introduced by the negative. The affirmative has their case, and that's really their position for the resolution. And the negative can argue against the affirmative case, but usually the negative brings in other issues to attempt to win the debate. And these other issues are really pretty critical for the negative strategically.
Yes, these are where the negative can provide most of their offense in the debate and really say to the affirmative, this is why you will lose the round.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Justin uses a word that's very important, and that's the word offense. If you think about offense and defense in sports, it's kind of the same. If you're the affirmative, your affirmative case is your offense. You're saying, this is why you should vote for me.
Yeah.
The negative reacts defensively against the affirmative case. Oh no, don't do that.
It might not solve.
It's not really a problem. And then it's really hard for the negative to win the debate without offense. So the arguments we're going to talk about now are the arguments that provide offensive positions for the negative. And the first one, and the most common form of negative offensive attack, is an argument called the disadvantage. Now, the disadvantage is an argument that says that if we adopt the affirmative plan, some bad thing will happen. It's a reason not to adopt the affirmative plan. It's not just any random argument about bad things happen. It's an argument that says that if we have the affirmative plan, something bad would happen. Usually a disadvantage is a chain of reasoning that says, well, if we adopt the affirmative plan, then something else will happen, then something else will happen, and that will lead to a very bad effect. And there are as many ways of constructing disadvantages and types of disadvantages as there are ideas in the minds of human beings. But a lot of them share some real basic components. You are telling a story with your disadvantage. The story you're telling is, if we adopt the affirmative plan, the future will be a terrible and nasty place. But usually, that disadvantage has several basic components to it.
Yep. Every disadvantage, one of the first critical things that they have are what we call links. And a link is simply just what connects the plan to the disadvantage. If you're going to get up there and say that if you enact the plan, something very bad will happen, the link is what explains how your plan actually causes the bad thing to happen. The next important thing that we have is an impact. And every disadvantage should have an impact. And impact simply just means the bad thing that happens as an effect of your plan. And usually that impact has something to do with war, or people dying, or environmental destruction, or
economic collapse,
something really that we all think of as being very bad.
And it's important that you not assume that the judge thinks that something is bad. Like, the impact of the disadvantage is not, it will hurt the economy.
No, there needs to be a reason why hurting the economy is a bad thing. There needs to be reasoning behind any kind of assertion that you get. And other than the links and the impacts, we have what are called internal links. And as Tuna explained, that's just the chain of reasoning that gets you from the link to the impact.
Mm-hmm. So we might say, for example, that if the affirmative team adopted an educational policy that said that all teachers have to participate in security searches of students, and that will make for safer schools. So the plan says all teachers will have to also become internal police in the school. You could have a disadvantage that says that the teachers would backlash.
Right.
And you might say the link is you make teachers search their students. The internal link would be the teachers will be really upset about that. They won't want to.
Yeah.
And what will happen is they could, since they're almost always unionized, you could have a teacher strike, saying we as teachers are unwilling to be, the police of the school. And the impact of a teacher strike could be no education whatsoever, and then stifling the educational system. So a disadvantage is a story about the future, and the future will be bad if we adopt the affirmative plan. And remember, you have to have a link, you have to have an impact, and at some point, you have to have the internal links that put those together. Likewise, if you're the affirmative and you're answering a disadvantage against you, like any chain of reasoning, you can pick the weakest link and break that.
Yes.
Maybe it doesn't link to the plan. Maybe the impact is not true. Maybe teachers want to be the police of the school. Who knows? But in any case, a disadvantage is a story, and you have to sell it. The way the disadvantage operates in the debate is, if the affirmative plan is a good idea, and if the affirmative can show that somehow it's a good idea, the disadvantage can be weighed against
the affirmative.
So it's a reason why you would reject the affirmative. Thus, it's an offensive argument. What's another form of offensive argument that the negative can use?
Another offensive argument, which is a little different, is something we call in debate the critique. And the critique is a negative argument that challenges the fundamental assumptions behind the affirmative plan. This is a little bit different from the disadvantage. This is not just saying that your plan will cause something bad to happen. It's saying that the assumption that you come into the rounds with in just presenting your 1AC is too much. We're not willing to assume that all of these things are okay, and so we are going to critique the fundamental assumptions behind your plan.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense that if someone comes to you with a proposal and you say the fundamental assumptions behind that proposal are either incorrect or evil, that you would
reject the plan. You would say it's not a good idea.
Right. For example, you might have someone who has a problem. They need a liver transplant. And all of a sudden, here's a plan that says we can get you the livers you need for that liver transplant. You might critique that to the extent that the liver was taken from, you know, somebody who was killed so that they could get the liver, or that it was purchased from someone who was poor, or that it was taken from a prisoner who was executed, and he was executed just so they could take the liver out. So, I mean, that's an example of where you can say the fundamental assumption is, yeah, I need a liver transplant, but it's not a good idea to have other people murdered so that you can get your liver transplant. There are different kinds of critiques, and one of the, perhaps the most popular, is what's called the framework critique. The framework within which the affirmative operates is incorrect or evil, so it should be rejected. For example, the affirmative may claim that they make schools a better place and that school is wonderful. You might critique that by saying that the institution of schooling is counterproductive. The institution of schooling is evil because it's brainwashing, it's thought controlling, it emphasizes control and obedience. So you could critique their fundamental assumption. Their framework is school good. And if you can critique that, then that could be a powerful argument against it. And there are all kinds of things that affirmatives will assume that you can critique. And I think it's the essence of debate that you learn to critique things like school, economic growth.
Yeah, the critique allows you to challenge basic assumptions that, you know, you might think are good now, or you might think are good after, but it just allows you to challenge basic assumptions that we have that are taught to believe.
The other form of a critique is a resolutional critique. If there's some word in the resolution that you can develop a critique of, for example, the resolution uses the term federal government, and you provide a critique to show that the federal government is an unwise, counterproductive, and evil way to solve our problems, that states or localities will be better, that could be a sort of resolutional critique. But you're sure to have a link to the critique because it's in the resolution. There's another kind of critique that's unique to what happens in the debate itself, and that's very thought-provoking.
And that would be what's called the language critique, also known sometimes as discourse critique. And this is when the affirmative reads their plan, and there might be some, one of the best examples is a sexist language critique. Their affirmative plan, all of their evidence is saying, we should do this, it would be better for man if this happened, he should do this, he should do that, and completely excluding the female, you know, the female voice altogether, you can then critique the affirmative language saying your language is sexist and because of that language you should be rejected. Racist language and homophobic language and all kinds of
pro-violent language. Right. It gives a chance for you to respond, not necessarily the policy that your opponents are proposing, but the language that they use.
Yes, you're saying that, you know, if you're going to propose a policy and your language is flawed and for a certain reason, if it's sexist or racist or something like that, then you should be rejected for that. You should think about the language you use because, you know, the way we talk, the words we use do have meaning, is what that argument is saying.
Okay, so the disadvantage says that if we adopt the affirmative plan, something bad will happen. The critique says that the basic assumptions of the affirmative are incorrect, counterproductive, or evil. And another offensive negative argument that can be introduced into the round is called the counterplan. Now, the affirmative has their plan, and the negative could also offer their counterplan. Now, traditionally, what the negative does is they support what's called the status quo, or what we have now. So it's traditionally assumed that that's what the negative supports. But sometimes the negative doesn't want to do that, because sometimes the status quo is not a good idea. And so instead of just saying, oh, you're right, the status quo stinks, you're able to say, well, we agree that there's a problem, but it would be better to adopt our plan instead of yours, our counterplan.
Right, and the counterplan is also another offensive argument for the negative to run. Most of the time, your counterplan, you want to try and make it non-topical to the resolution, but topical counterplans are okay. The most important thing about a counterplan is that it must be competitive to the plan. Now, for it to be competitive, that simply means that there needs to be a reason either why the counterplan is better or why the counterplan and the plan cannot happen at the same time. And usually a reason why the counterplan is better is because you'll reach some kind of disadvantage or some reason why the plan is a bad idea. And the counterplan will solve for the case, but it won't solve without linking to the disadvantage or whatever other argument you have against the affirmative plan.
One way to think about competition is that the counterplan has to be a reasonable alternative to the affirmative plan. For example, if the affirmative plan said we should go to dinner, and the negative counterplan said we should go to the movie, it's not really a reasonable alternative because we could go to dinner and go to the movie.
Yep.
But you could make the counterplan of going to the movie competitive. You could say that we don't have enough money to go to both, so we should go to the movie instead. We should go to the movie. Or you could have what Justin was saying, a disadvantage to the counterplan. That place where we go eat all the time, people have been getting food poisoning. That would be a disadvantage to the affirmative.
Yep.
It would apply to going to dinner, but it wouldn't apply to going to the movie. So the most important thing to remember about the counterplan is that it should be competitive. The other thing to remember is it should be a better idea. It should be better. It should address
competitive in a good way.
It should have a good, you know, it should hopefully address part of the affirmative problem and also not link to any of the disadvantages. So just ask yourself that and think about the example of going to dinner and going to the movie. And if you can think of a reason why it would be a bad idea to do both, then you're well on your way to making your counterplan competitive.
Yeah.
Judges will be tough on this. And affirmatives will try to think of ways in which, oh no, we can come up with enough money to go to both the movie and go to dinner, or no, they don't have food poisoning there anymore. So the affirmative will try to think of ways in which both can be done. And if the affirmative can show that there's no reason we can't do both, then the counterplan is defeated. It's not competitive,
right,
and it's not defeated. Those are some of the standard stock issues that are involved in the debate. The debate's about the resolution. The affirmative presents their case. And in their case, they say there's a problem. They explain why the problem persists in the status quo. They present a plan, and then they explain why the plan solves that problem. The other thing that the negative will do then is to attack the affirmative case, and those are their defensive arguments.
Yeah. And then after that, we have the offensive arguments for the negative, which is the disadvantage. And the disadvantage has to link to the affirmative plan and has to show a chain of events, which are internal links, to get to an impact, which is the bad thing that happens. We also have the critique, which challenges the basic assumptions behind the plan. There are resolutional critiques, framework critiques, and language critiques. And we also have the counterplan, which must be competitive in order to be able to defeat the affirmative.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the negative can use a combination of these. They don't the negative will have some case attacks, topicality argument. They would have a disadvantage, maybe a counterplan, maybe a critique.
Yeah.
But hopefully they all work together and don't contradict each other and provide a reason to vote against the affirmative. So those are the stock issues, and they come up in every debate. And they can be your friends, or they can be your enemy. And we urge you to get to know them so that you can use them, and you'll be on your way to debate success. Thanks a lot, Justin.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
See you later.
Goodbye.